Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. And folks, this week it is midterm mayhem here on Ring of Fire. Heather Digby Parton will be joining me once again to run through the biggest races, the biggest results, and of course, tell us what all of this means. The Republicans thought they were going to have an exceptionally great week, and they've all been pretty miserable since Tuesday. So Heather's going to be here with us in just a moment to tell us what all this means, not just for 2022, but also for the 2024 presidential race. And as always, if you want to help support Ring of Fire, go sign up and become a member at ROFpodcast.com. And for Ring of Fire every day of the week, subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. I'm sure everybody by now knows, in case you didn't, let me go ahead and inform you. We had some midterm races this week. We had a massive election last week. Heather Digby Parton from Salon.com joined me. She is with me once again this week because last week we talked about what could happen, and now we get to talk about what did happen. And I think it's safe to say for both of us, the Democratic Party exceeded our expectations, did they not?
Definitely they did. Thanks for having me, by the way. It's fun to come back after the last week, where really our expectations, I think you and I were in agreement that basically we didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, we weren't listening to the pundits. We weren't going with the analysis of, you know, hidden Trump voters and, you know, whatever, undercounting this and skewing the polls. What we were looking at, and we talked about it at length, was the actual polling, just the polls that were coming out. And looking at it nationally and looking at it in race by race, we talked a lot about it. We knew it was close. We knew it was within the margin of error. And so we weren't running around, you know, doing the doom and gloom about the Democrats like so many people were. We certainly weren't believing the right wing, you know, the spin that was going on, which was saying they were running away with it in a red wave. And we talked about the fact that that's a strategy of theirs to do this bandwagon effect, where they think if you say you're a winner, you're a winner. And the Democrats do the opposite. Oh, my God, the sky is falling. You better get out and vote because we're going to lose. You know, so two different approaches. And the bandwagon effect, which in this case was also set up to, you know, to challenge the election after it was over. And we may very well still see that because it's so close. The control of the House and the Senate are very, very close. So, you know, we'll see how that goes down. But we didn't do that. We were just sitting there going, hey, the polls are within the margin of error. I don't know. You know, we said at the end of it, we have to just live in uncertainty for a few days, which is very painful and difficult to do in these situations with the stakes are so high. So for our, you know, on Tuesday, when it became clear that there was no red wave, that really was spin and that the Democrats had done much better, I felt great relief that that kind of sort of unwillingness to go one way or the other, an unwillingness to kind of extrapolate from information that was very unclear what was going to happen. And then, you know, very pleased by what did, because by all the historical standards, by all the fundamentals, you know, by all the people screaming, it's the economy, stupid and high inflation, whatever, turns out that actually, the Democrats had a historic election on their side. I think it was the best midterm for a Democratic president in 45 years. I think that's what President Biden said yesterday. So pretty good. I mean, it's still tight. It's very close. This is a closely divided country. But in midterms, it's supposed to be a runaway for the out party, and it wasn't. So here we are with smiles on our faces because it just proves that America hasn't completely gone batshit insane.
Right. You know, some places, you know, and we'll get to that here in just a little bit. Some places across the country definitely did. But as a whole, again, even if as these, you know, final votes are still counted, which could take a week, 2 weeks, we don't even know. Democrats could still lose the House and the Senate, technically, but Absolutely. Even if they do, it still is a historic victory for the Democrats by not getting absolutely slaughtered, which 6 months ago, that was already a foregone conclusion that the Republicans, it wasn't even going to be close. They were going to have all these seats. Then the polls tightened, but then the polls widened again. And then we had the polls telling us that voters say it's the economy, it's crime, and it's immigration. Those are their three big issues. Okay, well, then we saw the Roe factor, right? I think that played a massive role in what we saw, not just because of turnout, but we also saw red states all over this country reject abortion bans on their ballots. Yep. Even states that voted for Republicans said, hell no, we don't want these bans. That was a massive victory that, of course, is not getting enough coverage. I know everybody wants to talk about the horse race stuff, but we've got red states out there repeatedly rejecting Republican policy. That's a big deal.
It's a huge deal. And do you remember in the weeks just before the election, we had pundit after pundit and Democratic strategists and everybody just, you know, absolutely wringing their hands. You know, they really talk too much about abortion. They shouldn't have spent so much of their energy talking about abortion. What about this democracy thing? Nobody cares about that. All they care about are pocketbook issues, and all they care about is inflation and gas prices and blah, blah, blah. Well, it did not turn out that way at all. I mean, even if you look at the exit polls, which, you know, just take with a grain of salt, because the exit polls have to then, you know, there's a lot of analysis that has to go into it after the fact. And sometimes it takes months before you know what, where they compare it to the actual vote and weight it and do all the kinds of things to get a real analysis of what the voters were saying. But based upon the early exit polls and the raw exit polling that we've seen, democracy and abortion were huge, huge issues. People said it over and over. They were volunteering it. They were saying it. And, you know, we had heard that anecdotally from a lot of reporters who were out in the field were saying, well, you know, a lot of people are talking about abortion. And yet you'd say, see again and again on the media, people going, well, you know, maybe not such a great idea to do that. And, you know, I saw an interesting thing about on Twitter, you know, I don't know, you know, Stuart Stevens, who used to be a big shot Republican analyst. Now he's with the Lincoln Project, and he's a total never Trumper. I think he's a Democrat now. I don't think he's even in the party. He said, you know, look, this idea that you look at, you know, that you look at something like, you know, the polling to decide, you know, to see and focus groups to see what people want you to run on is wrong. What winning campaigns do is they run on, they are the ones who set the agenda and they say what the issues are going to be. Republicans always know this and they do it. We saw their late surge on crime stuff. I mean, absolutely obnoxious, disgusting stuff coming out of, well, Stephen Miller stuff. I haven't heard a lot of people talking about that, but I have a sneaking suspicion, and maybe we can go into this later, that was a reason, one of the reasons why Republicans did badly. His stuff was grotesque, and it may have turned off those suburban voters that they really felt like they needed. But in any case, to get back to the regular subject, I just feel like the abortion and democracy issues, which everybody said was abstract and people didn't care, and, you know, well, they care, but they don't care as much. You know, this was the analysis. And that was just wrong. Those are big, important issues, and people are not apparently so stupid that they can't, you know, that they can't prioritize these things. Of course, people care about inflation. I do. You do. We all do. I mean, you know, nobody likes it. But at the same time, you know, when you compare that to impending fascism and, you know, the future of Handmaid's Tale in America, you know, it you see that as maybe a, you know, a transitory problem. These other ones are really big and you need to step it up. So I really feel like, you know, what the Democrats did here, and, you know, we give a lot of criticism of Democrats on all of these shows. You and I have done it. We've ragged on them terribly, but they did the right thing here, you know, and give Joe Biden a little credit. He went out there and made some speeches about democracy that everybody said, what a waste of breath. And even I was just saying, well, I don't know if it'll do anything, but he should say it anyway, you know. Wrong. He was saying something to the American people, to Democratic voters specifically, by having the president out there doing that. He's going, this is important. This isn't some, you know, Twitter thing. This is real. And I'm telling you now, you need to pay attention to it. So, you know, I'm pleased with the fact that a lot of that punditry, not that they'll learn anything by it. I mean, they will learn nothing and they will do whatever going forward. But you know, for those of us who observe the political scene and who comment about them as much as we comment about the politics, it's an important validation of the idea that, you know, when you're looking at an election that's really close and you see it's really close, it's really close. And that's all you know. Just, you know, I mean, if they're running away with it, OK, you can make some judgments. But no, not in this closely polarized electorate. Best to just, you know, keep your powder dry, as they say, and wait to see what the results are. And you might be happily surprised, as we were on Tuesday.
Exactly. And you know what? While we're talking about things the Democrats got right, that everybody kind of discounted at the time, I want to talk for a second, because this is something I got wrong. I criticized the heck out of them for doing this, and turns out I was wrong, and I happily admit I was wrong. The boosting of the fringe candidates.
Yep.
They took a lot of heat for that over the summer when they were putting millions into boosting. It was 13 Republicans. Six of them won their primaries. All six of these extreme candidates that Democrats had boosted lost. Every one of them. It wasn't a majority of them lost. It wasn't a couple of them lost. Every one of them that the Democrats bet on the public saying they'll reject this freak, they won every one of those bets. And I didn't see that coming. I thought this is going to be the biggest backfire. Nope. You had 35 congressional Democrats that sent a letter to the party saying, what the hell are you doing? You're going to kill us. We were all, I don't know if you were wrong, I was wrong, members of Congress were wrong, other people in this business totally wrong, they got it right, I give them full credit for that, because I didn't see it playing out that way, and they got a massive win doing that.
They did. I was actually behind what they were doing. I agreed with them. And my analysis at the time was that if you're in a swing district, and if you're looking at a moderate Republican potentially winning in that race, my feeling was is that if it was going to be a red wave, you know, they were going to get slaughtered anyway. So it didn't really matter. And if it was a red wave, those moderates would have very little voice in the Congress anyway. It was just not going to be this was going to be a full mandate for Hunter Biden 24/7. So the risk was there. It was always there that this could backfire, and very scary in a lot of ways. But I think the people in those districts were looking around and going, you know what, mom and pop, you know, Mr. and Mrs. America here in this suburb or whatever, they might like Peter Meyer, but this other guy is a nut and they won't go for it. They just won't. Or wherever, those bulldog in New Hampshire. Where they did that. So I think, and those are the kind of cases where I tend to think that the local campaigns have a better sense of those. And it's the swing districts where this worked. I mean, this was where they knew that they had a group, they had a faction within that district that was not, you kind of looking at these Trumper weirdos and going, yeah, I don't know about that. I can't go that far. That they kind of have a better sense of that. So I was for it simply because to me, what we were looking at was very likely a red wave. And I thought, what's the difference? You know, it's full of nuts anyway. It'll be run by nuts. Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to be the Speaker of the House. They're going to go crazy and we'll just have to gird ourselves for 2024. So at least maybe this way, maybe it gives them a chance to win. They were validated, and I don't think it works everywhere. My God, no. You know, I mean, there are places where you would never in a million years help the Republicans, you know, put in the worst candidate. But in a swing districts where you actually have a chance, it did make sense in this cycle, and we'll see how that goes, you know, further. But it was a repudiation across the board of an awful lot of the worst. Now, many of them won, but they were in deep red districts. The nuttiest of the nuts. I mean, there's going to be a whole new nut faction in there that is just going to. And by the way, they're going to drive Kevin McCarthy crazy or whoever. Now there's going to be a big fight. But they are a very unruly bunch. Let's just put it that way.
You know, and we got to talk about one unruly member who is struggling right now. Look, you and I are talking. Obviously, people are going to be listening to this days down the road. So maybe things have changed since you and I are sitting here. But as of right now, we have a virtual neck and neck race in Colorado. Adam Frisch, the Democrat, taking on incumbent Lauren Boebert. Boebert, at the moment, again, I know y'all are listening to this later on down the road, maybe even a month from now, but Boebert's got about a 400-vote lead. No matter what, it's probably going to a recount, no matter who prevails at the end of all this. But hers is a district that not only was already a Republican district, it was a Republican district that got more Republican after the 2020 redrawing of the districts. This was a slam dunk for her. It should have been. And now she's fighting for her political life to not, you know, basically pull a Madison Cawthorn and be out after one term. That is amazing. Even if she wins, it's still kind of a loss for them because they couldn't even get their own more Republican district to rally behind this freak. That's amazing to me.
It is amazing. And I don't know if she was on our list because we talked about this last week. Who did we really want to go? I don't know if she was, but she could have been on our list of the top three that we would like to see go down. So even seeing her struggle, I've had a great sense of schadenfreude over watching the struggle that she's gone through, even if she does end up pulling it off. It's very interesting what you just described. I mean, this district should not have been difficult for her. But from what I understand, just reading some of the local, you know, reporting on the race, she just, you know, she thought she was a national star. She's running around with her gun on Capitol Hill and, you know, going to CPAC and doing all that stuff. She was going to, you know, she was Sarah Palin part two, I think. And there's a lesson in Sarah Palin part two, which she's doing part three right now. But, you know, part two, which is that, you know, these people, a lot of these Republicans, especially in districts like she's in, you know, they kind of, I mean, they may watch Fox and they may like the, you know, the all the Donald Trump show. They may like all that, but they still want their representative to have something to do with them, that there needs to be some kind of attention paid. It wasn't until the last month that she actually even ever tweeted, I read this somewhere, anything about her local district, never said a word about it the entire term. So suddenly she's talking about roads and bridges and stuff. You know, I'm back here filling in potholes, you know, but, you know, they had a sense of that. And then there's the lesson on the other side, which is that the Democrats put up a very good candidate in there. Now, he's a moderate, may not be my cup of tea in the million ways, but if I lived there, I'd sure as heck vote for him because he's very good and he's a very good politician. He went out to every single district, every single community in that district over and over again. And he sold himself as somebody, look, you know, I'm not beholden to anybody. I'm an independent just like you. You know, we're independent people. We think for ourselves. And I'm not, you know, which is a slam on Boebert, right? Because she's a Trumper all the way. She just, you know, a member of the cult. And he's going, I'm not like that. Either way, I'm not that way with Biden and I wouldn't be that way with Trump. And what I care about is what's going on with you. And let's talk about broadband, you know, rural broadband. Let's talk about, you know, the infrastructure that we need here and stuff like that. And that's a race, unlike, you know, a lot of them, where it was very important. And he ran his own race. And, you know, a lot of people said, what a waste. And I feel kind of bad about that because there was, you know, there was a lot of discussion about who could have used a little more help. And he was written off. This was not a race that, you know, and although I kept hearing from people sort of out in the field saying, this guy's running a really good race. I mean, he's good. He's good. People like him. But there was a general consensus that maybe, you know, that he didn't have a chance. Well, you know, maybe there's some lessons learned there, too. That some of these people, if you make a political judgment that somebody's running a really good race and there's a feeling in the district that, hey, you know, this guy's good, maybe you should get in there because that might even pay off next time, right? Even if it doesn't pay off in that race, it's building the infrastructure to change that district into something that maybe you can count on. So very, very interesting. And, you know, Boebert, really, I mean, come on. This is a woman who texted 1776 on January 6th. Which was a QAnon, you know, militia signal, and was saying, well, Nancy Pelosi's left the House floor, you know, kind of telling people that she wasn't there. I mean, this woman has no business being in Congress. And, you know, I'm hoping at this moment that this recount, whenever that happens, basically, you know, kicks her out. But, you know, fingers crossed. In any case, I'm glad she's getting a scare, if nothing else.
You know, yeah, and again, like you mentioned last week, we did talk about who we'd like to see lose. Her name didn't come up, but you know what? That is a good consolation prize. So let's talk about some of the folks who did lose. You know, you mentioned Palin Part 3. She's just down in flames up there in Alaska. That was wonderful. Dr. Oz.
Thank you.
Hopefully we never even have to talk about Dr. Oz ever again. I mean, that's a real possibility. Oh. He doesn't have a TV show anymore. He's been exposed as the snake oil fraud. So hopefully he's gone. But the one guy, Herschel Walker, heading for the runoff. But I think now that the nation can actually all focus 100% on Georgia, that's probably not good for Herschel Walker. And it's great for Warnock, because I don't think Warnock, as a reverend, wants to run a super negative campaign. And you know what? You don't have to. But what we can do now is have all of these other Democratic groups come in, and they can run the ads and say the things about Herschel Walker that you don't want to say, but that need to be said. Sometimes you got to get your hands a little dirty. That's not who he is, and that's fine. But let's get some of these Democratic groups. Y'all can swoop into Georgia today and make a big difference for that December 6th runoff.
Agreed. And, you know, they need to push the mainstream media to expose Herschel Walker as well. You know, one of the things I think, as we're sitting here talking, there are two races outstanding in the Senate race, aside from Georgia, which is going to a runoff. There's Nevada and there's Arizona. And we don't know yet how those two are going to come out, although they are looking fairly positive for at least one of them to go Democratic, which would mean that, you know, the Georgia election will decide the fate of the majority. If they get both of them, then the Georgia runoff no longer does that. That would be the 51st vote for the Democrats. So, you know, fingers crossed here as we're talking about that. But it does change the dynamic in Georgia. My personal feeling is, I mean, Walker did way, way worse in the election than Brian Kemp did at the top of the ticket. So there were a lot of people who didn't vote for him. I don't know if they left it blank or if they voted for Warnock. I don't know if that's been determined. But whatever it was, they definitely didn't. There were plenty of people who voted for Kemp and not for Walker. So there's already a sense among Republicans, or at least independents who voted for Kemp, that I don't think any Democrats voted for Kemp. But, you know, if they did, they need to take stock. but, you know, this idea that, you know, Walker did not do as well. I think that if there are two scenarios. One is that everything depends on the Georgia race. If that happens, then, you know, then it's hand-to-hand combat. It is just, you know, dog eat. It's going to be so ugly and so horrible, but that's the way it's going to be, because the fate of the Senate will be determined, and judges and, you know, a million other things that are very, very important will be in the hands of Herschel Walker and Raphael Warnock. But if they don't have to, then I really suspect, and maybe even if they do, I really suspect a lot of Republicans aren't going to bother to vote in the runoff. Because why? I mean, they don't really like Walker. The only reason they backed him at all, to the extent they did, I mean, I'm not saying some of them probably really like him. I shouldn't say they all do. But I think there are a large number of Walker voters who held their nose and voted for him. They know that he is completely unfit for the Senate, but that he was going to be the deciding vote in the Senate, or a deciding vote in the Senate. And they, you know, they just figured, well, Mitch McConnell will keep him in line or something. If that's not the case, I don't see any reason why they would come out and vote for him. So, and of course, then you have to worry about the Democrats doing the same thing, and that will be up to the Democratic Party to ensure that every last voter comes out for Warnock. And, you know, there's a pretty good turnout machine in Georgia, so hopefully that will happen. But it's very interesting, this dynamic. I think you're absolutely right. The Democrats have to come in full bore against Walker, for Warnock, And, you know, they can run their race, but the Democratic Party and the Democratic groups, I mean, Warnock is a wonderful senator, you know. I mean, he's not just another guy, another suit that they want to send there. He's really good. I mean, some of his speeches and his leadership on issues like voting rights, super, super important. I mean, it's really important for the Dems to keep him in, regardless of whether or not it means the majority. So hopefully they will follow your advice and get in there on his behalf.
It really is so important for them to do that. And, you know, all right. So talking about Georgia, move a little bit further south. Let's come to my home state of Florida. This is one of the areas where the Democrats, they got their asses handed to them in a historical way. I mean, yep. Ron DeSantis won by more than 1.5 million votes, which is the biggest margin, as far as I've seen, it's the biggest margin we've ever seen in the state of Florida. I cannot stress that enough to everybody listening to this, watching this, whatever it is. This was a bloodbath. And sure, yep. We had a historically bad candidate, Charlie Crist, who has mm-hmm. now lost statewide elections as a Republican, as an independent, and as a Democrat, the only person in Florida history that holds that distinction now. So sure, he was not
liked. Is there anyone in America who's done that? I can't think of an
I don't know that there is. I really think Charlie Crist is just a universal loser with every party at this point. But uh-oh, right? I mean, DeSantis is popular in a very red state, you right. know? So that's where things get a little trickier. Yes, it was a massive victory, but Florida's been going redder and redder and redder yeah. each election. So do we look at this as, oh God, here comes Ron, or is it like, Florida is gone? I don't know which one it is yet.
I don't know which one it is yet either. I would, at the moment, I'm kind of in between those two. I don't, because I look at Ron DeSantis. Now, I don't live there, so I don't see him every day, but he gets a lot of coverage. So I watch, and I watch everything he does, because I've been keeping my eyes very, very closely peeled on Ron DeSantis for the last couple of years, for obvious reasons, because he's the rising star of the Republican Party. And, you know, to me, I don't, you know, I am not sure that he has that magic. In the Republican Party, there's always some, what I always call the great white bread hope, right? There's always some kind of governor out there somewhere. Used to be in the upper Midwest. Then now I think you've got DeSantis, maybe Youngkin. You know, there are some others that are sort of more on the southeast side that they see as the, you know, the rising star, the next big guy, you know, Paul Ryan, somebody like that. And so I'm not sure that DeSantis isn't just that. Which I'm not to say is a flash in the pan. Florida's a big state, very powerful, and he is the king of Florida, no doubt about that. They love him down there. I mean, he is a, you know, I shouldn't say they, but you know, a large majority really like what he's doing. So I don't discount him in any way. But by the same token, you know, I do see that he is probably the best heir to Trumpism that is out there. I don't see anybody who comes close to really grabbing whatever that thing is that, you know, and I think it's just, you know, being a jackass, you know, who can be the, you know, really, I mean, it's just, the MAGA people really like that. I mean, that is what that's what gets them up in the morning is, you know, was he an even bigger jackass last night? Oh, great. I love him all the more. And, you know, you see that with Fox News and Tucker Carlson and, you know, there's a whole group of them. So I think he is that guy. And the big question for me in that is, does he have that X factor that Trump has? And I honestly don't think he does. Because when I watch him, I mean, Trump, who I loathe with every fiber of my being, as is obvious, but I do understand a little bit of his appeal. Trump is fun for these people. He makes it a party. He makes it, I mean, a party in like, you know, woo, a fun party, not a political party.
Yeah.
You know, he is a party. He is a guy who is, you never know what's going to happen with him. He says all kinds of crazy stuff. He's exciting. Maybe exciting is better than fun. He's an exciting politician to these people. And they show, you know, the whole MAGA cult, and I don't know how many people it represents, but it's tens of millions of Americans are in that cult. They love it. That's just, it's the highlight. It's like, well, you know, they're following the dead, the Grateful Dead around the world. You know, I mean, that is their, it's their, you know, it's their Deadhead tour. So, you know, does DeSantis have that? Because I don't see it. What I said, that guy, it doesn't have that magic. Yes, he's a jackass. He's very, very mean. He's nasty. He's crude. He's cruel. And he's clever. But that's not the same thing. And he is not the same kind of jackass as Trump is. So, you know, I'm watching it unfold. I think it's entirely possible that he will run and decide now's the time and just decide to go for it. I also think it's just as possible that he decides to sit it out. I'm a young guy. I can wait till 2028. I can turn Florida into a dystopian hellscape like no one's ever seen before. And then they'll love me even more. So, you know, why not wait until 2028? So I, you know, again, I don't know, but it's a very, very interesting dynamic that we're seeing starting to unfold right now between Trump and DeSantis. That I think whatever happens, it's going to be fun to watch for us.
You know, I think you really nailed it about DeSantis' personality, because all it is being mean. I mean, and he doesn't ever, like, Trump will go out and do his rallies just like he did in 2015 and you know, ever since then. He'll smile. He'll laugh. Mm-hmm. He'll sit there. He'll make jokes with you. And I do think that endears him to some of these people, especially in the early days. The more moderate folks may have been like, you know what? It is exciting. DeSantis doesn't have that. I don't think I've ever seen the man smile. No. So he doesn't have the charisma. He doesn't have the, and I hate to use this word, the charm that Donald Trump is capable of turning on. I mean, Donald Trump can flatter the hell out of somebody. We know he does it for selfish reasons, but he can make somebody feel really good about themselves. DeSantis can't do that. So,
well, no, I mean, Trump makes people feel good about themselves by reflecting their own beliefs. They always say this, you know, he says what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And but people don't want to think of themselves as being a dark and dour creep. They want to think of themselves as being a big winner, a guy who's just, you know, he's really got it going on. Look at the babes I've got. And, you know, look at my kids and all my money. And, you know, I mean, he has a flash about him, you know, a flamboyance. That they like seeing, you know, they like seeing themselves reflected in. Like this is a guy, he's my leader, and boy, is he cool. You know, I mean, granted, that's ridiculous, but that is, I really believe that's what they think. And DeSantis has none of that. You know, he is a very, and he's controlled and kind of cramped, and he just, you know, he has this tunnel vision, and yes, he's a total jerk. That part of it they like. But I, you know, beyond that, where, how much appeal does that have, you know, across in the Republican Party? I mean, I just don't know. But, you know, look, Florida is a big state, and it's also kind of a microcosm. You know, I mean, there's everything in Florida that exists in the rest of this United States, all the demographics, all the, you know, the different, you know, in political environment. So, you know, I certainly would never, I would not write Ron DeSantis off. I would never do that, because he has something. I just don't think it's the same thing that Trump has. And I'm not quite sure that it's what the country really wants, you know, without Trump there as kind of the avatar, the MAGA god that DeSantis is being reflected off of. I'm not sure that really is going to work for him. But see.
Well, and obviously we have to talk about Trump now, because of all the losers this week, clearly Donald Trump, the biggest loser. And we know he's the biggest loser because he spent the rest of the week on Truth Social telling us that he's totally not a loser.
Right.
So that kind of confirms that, okay, yeah, you're definitely the loser here. But I mean, my God, the list is endless. You know, Mastriano, J.R. Majewski, I mean, possibly Lauren Boebert, possibly Carrie Lake, Sarah Palin, Bulldog. You know, I mean, again, so many more, and I know I'm forgetting a ton of names that are on the tip of my tongue, but...
Oh, Masters, yeah.
Masters, I mean, yes. So, Dr. Oz, Herschel Walker, across the board, Donald Trump, huge loser. So immediately, just immediately, and this was so wonderful, across the board in conservative media, especially Rupert Murdoch-controlled media, they're already writing his epitaph. He's done. Yeah. We're moving on. We can't have this guy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I want to be optimistic. Is Trump's political career dead? He's not going to think it's dead. You know, he may be walking it around like a zombie, but I think there was a lot of writing on the wall on Tuesday about just how much power and influence Trump actually has.
Well, I think that's clear that he doesn't have that much power and influence over any of the races. And by the way, never has.
Yeah.
I mean, remember back in 2018, when he was the president, or in 2020, he endorsed a bunch of people who didn't win. He doesn't have that. You know, that is not his power. His power is him. And the power that he has, I mean, I agree with you. I don't know if he's just going to be some zombie walking around. He will keep walking around, whether he's a zombie or still alive. He's not going anywhere, not under these circumstances anyway. I don't know yet whether or not there has been some kind of a mortal wound. The thing that he has going for him, and it's the same thing he's had going for him the entire time. I mean, you would have thought January 6th, right? That was the day. Even Lindsey Graham's up there saying, count me out, you know, I'm done. And you had all these, you know, people resigning from the cabinet. All the newspapers were going, this is the worst day in history, you know, Donald Trump. You would have thought that was the end, right? I mean, if that wasn't the end, you're going, what would it take to end him? And so I am not sure that this election, where he was not on the ballot, is the death blow. What I do think, though, is that it may encourage some other people to come on and go ahead and you know, challenge him. Maybe DeSantis. I mean, if anybody does, it's DeSantis. But I think you're going to see Chris Christie. You're going to see, you know, maybe Mike Pompeo. You'll see some others kind of tepidly test the waters now to see just how warm those waters are with the. I mean, obviously they have to get the nomination, right? And therein lies the rub. Everybody knows. I mean, Donald Trump just said today he's definitely announcing next week, or he's holding the rally where he has a big announcement, right? I mean, whatever. So all the talk about him holding off on announcing, that's not happening, which does not surprise me. Of course, he's going to do it. He has legal issues that he needs to deal with. The announcement he thinks will help him with. But, you know, he's not going to do anything. If they go after him in even the slightest in a campaign, he will go out of his way to destroy them. Now, maybe that won't work with most people in the Republican Party, but it will work with the MAGA faithful. And the MAGA faithful make up a large percentage of the Republican Party, could be 35%, that are just hardcore Trump true believers. That's a veto power within the party. And everybody's known that from the beginning. They knew it on January 6th. Once it became clear, and this is the truth, they all were just, we got to get rid of Trump, let's impeach him so he can't run again, blah, blah, blah. Then they went back to their districts, and Lindsey Graham got screamed at in the airport, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is what happened to them. The MAGA people, the faithful, came out and screamed in his face. So, you know, I said, it's possible, but until I see a real fall off in the MAGA cult, that has been... that they're, you know, moving on, or they're saying, you know, well, no, you know, I don't know. I'm out. I don't. Politics is boring. I don't really care about it anymore. Whatever. I am going to be skeptical that anybody can beat him for the Republican nomination. The good news is that it makes it more possible for him to be beaten in the general election, because this stuff is taking its toll around the country. People are sick of him. You know, and I think a lot of Republicans are sick of him, too. And, you know, they're looking at it going, you know, this guy, come on, you know, we've got to put a stop to this. We just have to. So, you know, my feeling is that he's going to go on, that he is going to continue on. And I think he will continue on with a good, solid, you know, core of true believers. And that is going to be the veto proof. You know, vote that he had, you know, for the nomination. But, you know, maybe I'll be wrong. I mean, who knows? I mean, I don't think Youngkin's going to beat him. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. And okay, so let's combine what we saw in 2022, just, you know, a couple days ago, with what we're talking about right now with Trump in 2024. You're absolutely right. That Republican base still belongs to Donald Trump. So he can win a primary. Mm-hmm. But then, obviously, that's half the battle. You got to go to the general. Well, what we just saw this week was voters, even in, you know, even in red districts, but mostly, obviously, the swing districts, say, no, we reject this. We reject the extremism. We reject the MAGA crowd. So if Trump can only pull most of the Republican people to vote for him in a general election, that's going to be a bigger victory than what Ron DeSantis had in Florida this week, because you're talking about less than 30% of the population that's going to vote for you. So I think the lesson from 2022 is that the extremism cannot play in moderate districts and states. I think that's the big takeaway we learned.
I agree. And I really think that that is what we have learned. Something's happening. You know, like the independents, everybody, all the pollsters were watching the independents and saying, well, they're going to break for the Republicans in the end. They didn't. At least from the exit polls that we've seen so far, caveat again, that we don't know whether or not those are really telling us anything. But from what we have seen, the independents did break for the Democrats. And that's everything. You know, the Republican Party isn't a majority in this country. You know, we're polarized. You know, we're pretty much neck and neck, but the independents really do make the difference. And yes, many of them are Republicans. You know, they're independents in name only. They're Republicans or they're Democrats. They always vote one way. This time, you know, apparently more of them voted with the Democrats. And that just tells you something. You know, I think people are tired of the clown show. I think people are finally to the point. I mean, I know I am, and I make my living doing this stuff, you know, so you would think that I would be, well, keep it going. You know, it gives me copy to write about every day. You know, I mean, you would think that, but I really don't feel that way. I feel like the country has been traumatized by, you know, years and years of this Trump and the pandemic and then the consequences of the pandemic and the economy that's been just in turmoil ever since it happened. All of this, you know, even people who, you know, who make their living doing this stuff are, you know, are saying, wait, just can we have a break here? You know, I mean, not that it's ever going to go back to normal, what we thought was normal. Things have changed. There's a lot of new technology. There's a lot of things that are going to be permanently different from this coming out of this era. But nonetheless, this freak show that exists on the right, maybe people have reached a point. Now, there's the opposite that could happen, which is that the authoritarian right, could, you know, we've been watching it ascend, and it's barely being held off by the normal people. You know, I mean, this is a close election, right? It wasn't like it was a landslide. So every election's been close for years now, and what they're holding off is this Tucker Carlson, CPAC, Viktor Orban, Ron DeSantis, right-wing, you know, authoritarian movement that has been gaining steam. And so far, the normal people have come out and said no and used what they have, the vote, to hold them off. So, you know, nobody should be complacent and just assume, well, you know, people are getting tired of it, so let's move on, because that threat is still out there. It's just that Trump is a different sort of leader of all of this. I mean, he is a leader of it, but he's not an ideological leader. Trump is a show business leader. You know, he's like a sports star or something. I mean, he's a different kind of thing. But underneath it all, this other thing is going on, and everybody had better not take their eye off the ball, because after Trump, or with Trump, if he wins, comes this movement, which is building and gaining steam on the right. So, you know, I don't want to be too Pollyanna-ish about this, because there's, you know, losing the House by just a few seats and gaining a seat in the Senate is hardly, you know, that's a firewall that is not very much of a wall. So, you know, we need to keep our eye on what's going on, because it's bad. The threat is still bad.
We do. And one of the ways, though, that I think this country in general is kind of safeguarding itself, which is good to see. But we saw, obviously, several high-profile right-wing challengers to Democratic governors go down. And four states flipped. You know, everybody wants to talk about the national, the House, the Senate races, all that. We got some state races here that absolutely put some safeguards there to make sure that, you know, next time Trump tries to steal an election, it ain't going to be in these states. So that's another victory and something, of course, the Democrats need to be given credit for, because that's where you can make the change. I mean, look at what Ron DeSantis has done to us here in Florida. Yep. That's where you do it. And the Democrats picked up some huge, huge victories on the state level.
They did. And that was huge because they've never really put much focus on that before, certainly not in midterms. You know, I mean, it was just this idea that, I mean, I think it had something to do with abortion in some cases. And it also had to do with voting rights, which, again, the pundits all said, why stop talking about voting rights? Nobody cares. Well, you know, basically, it made a huge difference in some of these state races. I mean, places live in Michigan. I mean, you know, you hear a lot about Ron DeSantis and what a juggernaut he is and how he, you know, did it. And it's all true. I mean, he's, you know, king of Florida. Gretchen Whitmer is the queen of Michigan. And she and her top four all women all won. They're all progressive. And they flipped both houses in Michigan. And, you know, that is a huge key swing state. I mean, that is the Democrats, you know, shoring again, you know, you're talking about firewalls, that's shoring up that blue wall that they had against election deniers, many of whom were on the ballot in various races. And some of them at the, well, the governor race were, those are election deniers who were on the ballot, and they pushed back and they won. And, you know, Whitmer deserves credit just right along with Ron DeSantis. You want to talk about an up and comer. I mean, I would say that's her, because that state is not easy. I mean, Michigan is a true swing state. Yes, I'm like, well, look at it this way. Florida really is a red state, right? So the red state governor does a bunch of red state things and he wins.
Yeah.
Michigan is not a blue state. It's been purple for the last few cycles. And here you have a Democratic governor and administration that came in and they did a whole lot of stuff that people liked, and they managed to flip the state houses there. So, you know, she deserves maybe even more credit than DeSantis, because she had a much higher, you know, wall to climb there. So, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, this was important, and a lot of election deniers lost. A lot of them won. I mean, they won, but they won in places where they didn't win in the places where they were going to make a difference so far. I shouldn't say they didn't, because we're still looking at Nevada and Arizona, and both of those are important swing states. But even in a red state like Georgia, the election deniers didn't win. They're Republicans who fought the election denial there, like Raffensperger. He won his race. But at least they're not that. I mean, he's a Republican, so, you know. But he's also somebody who would not go along with what Donald Trump was trying to do. So, you know, you're right. I mean, this is very, very important.
These states that the Democrats picked up, obviously, again, that is huge. And still, as you said, we got a couple question marks out there, question marks that a little uneasy, because we are talking about the states where the focus of Trump was after the 2020 election. Obviously, Arizona is a big one. So what could happen if Trump runs for president, once again tries to contest it, say, no, Arizona, but suddenly he's got friendly faces over there? Carrie Lake, what are you going to do? Are you going to help me out? She's basically already told us, hell yeah, I'll do it, which is terrifying. And it's just, what gets me about it is the audacity of it.
Yeah.
Like, she's already like, sure, I'll do it. I'm not even in office yet, but I'll do it. And what are you going to do, voters? You're still going to pick me, even though I'm telling you the horrible things I'm going to do to you. It blows my mind sometimes that voters can still look at these things and say, yep, though, you know what, though? She's a straight shooter.
Yeah,
and I'm going to
sure
go
like
for
her.
So, yeah, there's still a lot of landmines, I guess we could call them, out there in this country that easily could, you know, that step to fascism really is just one step away in a lot of places. And we do have to be very concerned about that.
Of course we do. And, you know, in these swing states, I mean, we watched it all unfold in 2020. We know where the challenge is, where the threats are. I mean, we know what states they're in. We just do, you know, and, you know, Pennsylvania, that was totally up for grabs. That could have gone the other way. Thank God it did not. And because the governor there picks the Secretary of State, and, you know, they've got a weird, and they flipped the Senate, I think, in Pennsylvania. And the last I heard, they were on the verge of possibly flipping the House in Pennsylvania, which would change everything. Fingers crossed that, you know, whatever in there, they have stopped whatever that juggernaut was that was going on in Pennsylvania. And then Michigan, as I mentioned. But yeah, it doesn't take much. I mean, if the elections are as if the election is as close in 2024 as they've been since 2016, just really close. Every election has been close. I mean, 2018 was a pretty good year for Democrats, but it wasn't a 2010 level blowout. You know, and the races were all very close margins. It's just that the Democrats pushed it over, just like they did this time, managed to you know, win some close races with a very small margin. So this is still a very polarized country. And all it takes in the Electoral College, as we know, is, you know, one of these swing states, maybe two, depending, to have some election denier like Carrie Lake in there. Now, you look at Nevada, and Nevada, which, you know, we're as we're talking, and we'll probably know by the time this airs who won the Senate race there. The governor's race doesn't look particularly promising, and that could be a very right-wing governor in Nevada. And Nevada's one of those states where they were in there battling, remember, in 2020 over the Electoral College. They had Rick Grenell, and I can't remember some other right-wing weirdo there that were pushing for the fake electors in Nevada. And of course, Arizona, we don't even need to mention that. We know I think we know what they're going to do if Carrie Lake is the governor there, and Donald Trump in particular, but I think any Republican, if they don't win, she said that, you know, if I'll accept the results of the election because I'm going to win. That's how she put it. So, you know, I think we know what that means. So, yeah, I mean, I think it would be a huge mistake for anybody to sort of be complacent here and assume that, well, the threat has passed and we're going to get back to normal. And maybe, well, first of all, the mere idea that if Ron DeSantis wins instead of Trump, that means we're going back to normal is really a misapprehension because Ron DeSantis is an absolute nightmare. So, you know, we don't want that to happen either. But whatever happens, you know, this country is still very closely divided and anything can happen. And if the Republicans get back into the presidency, and if they take the Senate again in the future, I'm talking, you know, hopefully not now, but in the future without a Democratic president with a veto pen, they learned a lot from Trump's 4 years. And they have learned a lot about what they can and cannot get away with. And maybe not everybody could get away with what Trump has gotten away with his whole life. I doubt it. He's got some kind of magical ability to slither out from everything that he's done. But I don't think everybody has that. But nonetheless, the power is there. And they know that they have to wield the power, and they will do it. And it's you know, nobody, we can take a breather here this week. The election's over. We've got a little time. Next Wednesday, I think it's Wednesday, Tuesday. Next Tuesday, the 2024 election's starting, yeah. Folks. So, you know, don't plan anything because this is happening. And it you know, there's not going to be any kind of a lag here between the two campaigns. It's on, and it's not going to be pretty. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, we're not even going to have the final midterm results yet before we're literally, with Trump announcing just right already in the thick of a 2024 race. Yeah. You know, there's no rest for us. In this business, okay. We've got to stay on it. But I do also want to throw out, just quickly talking about, you know, these Republican governors. We got the other ones who also won. We don't know. I mean, it's likely Trump won't need any of these people to flip an election for him. But these could also emerge as names that we see more of as the 2024 presidential race heats up. Kristi Noem, Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Oh, God.
Greg Abbott. Uh-huh. Brian Kemp. Ron DeSantis. big names. And to me, as horrible as Kristi Noem is, and as very obvious as it was that she abused her power because her daughter didn't get the real estate appraiser's license, my God, I mean, come on. But she could be a sleeper that kind of emerges in the 2024 race. I don't think she's brave enough to take on Trump, but there's blood in the water. Mm-hmm. You know, if anything with Trump, he's not dead, but he's wounded. And if these individuals can strike, I think any one of those people could emerge as a Republican frontrunner. I mean, Abbott's on what, his third term now? He's got an attorney general that's been under indictment for 7 years and hasn't gone to trial. Brian Kemp could posture himself as the more, look, I'm an extreme Republican, but I'm not a crazy Republican.
Right, absolutely.
And Kristi Noem, if something were to happen to Trump and he can't run, Kristi Noem takes it over as, I'm the MAGA person. I've been running my state so great. Look at how wonderful. Everybody loves South Dakota. Most people can't even point to it on a map.
I know. It's like, wait,
but
there's some
challengers out there, is what I'm saying. And these are people who all have the benefit of not having to run for re-election in 2024, so they could run for president with nothing to lose. And that offers even more incentive for them to do it.
Right. And there's often in these presidential primary races, there's people who just want to boost their profile. You know, of course, that's where Donald Trump comes in, too, because if anybody challenges him, you know that he's going to go after them with everything. You know, he doesn't hold back. So you've got, hopefully they have a thick skin because it won't be pretty. But I think you're absolutely right. There are people who, there's all kinds of jockeying going on. And, you know, I think that, you know, we're going to be looking at, we've got a, you know, probably a good 8-9 months, I think, ahead of us of watching this jockeying go back and forth before it really starts to settle in if there's really going to be a primary. By the way, God knows, I hope there is, because it'll be wonderful. It's like Joe Biden said yesterday in his press conference, which, by the way, was really good.
It was.
Anybody didn't see it. I honestly think it's the best press conference of his presidency. He was great. He was really on. And what he said all was, you know, really, really good. And I think it was, you know, that's, we want to see that. that's good stuff. But he said, you know, they asked him about the DeSantis-Trump matchup, and he goes, well, you know, I don't know, but I'm looking forward to seeing them go after each other. And yes, I am too. We're all looking forward to that. You know, in fact, I tend to enjoy Republican primaries quite a bit because of that. You know, you're watching them, it's like a, you know, it's scorpions in a jar. It's a very, you know, it's not a pleasant sight, but still, you know, you're glad that you're safely away from it, and they're sort of contained in their own little bubble.
And I do, just on the topic of Republican primaries, it reminds me of, you know, when we first started Republican debates in 2015, because they started in July of 2015, which was terrible. Let's not forget, Trump was not immediately the first. There was a point in time where Ben Carson was the Republican front runner. So, folks, anything can happen in a Republican primary. Yeah. It's not always the person who emerges for it. Carly Fiorina was the front runner for, I think, like 5 days one time.
Absolutely.
It was fun. All these people were horrible. You know, it's definitely fun watching them up on the debate stage. Because, like you said, it's scorpions in a jar, and I love that analogy, and I'm going to use it moving forward. I do hope there is a primary.
Yeah, me too.
It's so much fun to watch. And again, anything can happen. Look, Trump is running. We know that. But God only knows what that actually means. Who knows what the DOJ is going to do?
Well, there's all that hanging out there, too. You know, that's another sort of wild card in this whole thing. You know, nobody knows where that's going to go. I mean, I don't think it'll stop him. I think if he's under indictment, I think that he believes clearly that the martyrdom of that sort of thing really helps him. And it may with the MAGA cult. I mean, I just think that there's this cult there. There's this group that's very, very solid. I haven't seen any evidence that they have fallen away from him. I mean, you go over to Truth Social, it's a really weird thing. People haven't gone over there. They really should check it out. It is the strangest social media platform of all. I mean, there's other right wing ones like Gab and, you know, I don't know what else, the Donald, and, you know, there's other stuff out there. And they're all just, they're just right wing fascist militant freaks, right? But Truth Social is just so Donald centric. It's so Trump centric, and it's all these memes. Meme after meme after meme of him in a Superman suit and looking like Jesus and carrying a gun and the Terminator. That's the big new thing. They've even got a doll now that is Trump as the Terminator. I mean, it's such a cult worship thing that I just don't see that dissipating that quickly. I mean, it's not going to last forever, obviously, but I just don't see that. I really think that is the big problem for the Republican Party going forward into the 2024 election. Now, had Donald Trump shut his pie hole during the 2022 election cycle, they would have done a lot better. I mean, he was a drag on the ticket across the board. There's no doubt about it. The fact that he's hanging out there blabbing is a real drag on there, and they would have done better without him. And if he hadn't been endorsing these weirdos and all that kind of stuff, but he can't, you know, he can't. And now he's going to be on the ballot. So, you know, there's nothing they can do about it. And, you know, and one of the things we haven't talked about, just if we have a couple of seconds here, is, you know, let's also scorpions in a bottle. Keep your eye on Kevin McCarthy and the House Republicans, if they are going to take the majority with just one or two, maybe four or five votes, which, you know, let's just put it this way. Kevin McCarthy is no Nancy Pelosi. And the Democratic caucus that she ran is nothing like the Republican caucus that he is going to be running with a very, very small majority. It is going to be a red wedding. And so that's something to enjoy as well. You know, I don't know where it'll come out, but I just know that I'm going to enjoy watching it because it's not going to be pretty.
Right. Pelosi did a good job of kind of keeping the everything in order. You know, listen, yeah. I know you got your things. I'm not going to do it. Okay, you've convinced me on this. I will do it. With Kevin McCarthy, he's going to walk into a household with 218 cats that each have their own agenda, and they're all just clawing at each other, and he's going to...
And there's a group of them over here that are rabid. And they're rabid cats, and they are completely out of control, and they're running around biting everybody.
And they've all got worms too. Yeah.
Queen of the cats, Marjorie Taylor Greene. And that, you know, this is what he's stuck with. And it is, I mean, if he had a big win, I think he was in pretty good shape. It still would have been very difficult because John Boehner, who is a real, politician and a real, you know, caucus leader, and Paul Ryan, who studied at his knee, both of them failed as speakers because of this right-wing faction. That right-wing faction is now, you know, it is morphed into a full-blown, you know, juggernaut within the Republican Party. And, you know, come on, let's face it. Kevin McCarthy is a joke. I mean, he is. The reason he's in the position he's in now is that he has a good relationship with donors. But he is terrible as any kind of a leader. And I will, you know, pass the popcorn because this is something that I, you know, if indeed he does make it, I am going to enjoy watching what happens to him. Again, scorpions in the bottle, and he's the, you know, the little piece of meat that's sort of at the bottom of the jar.
Listen, Heather Digby Parton, you and I, we could probably sit here and talk for another 5 hours.
We barely
We really did. But listen, it's wonderful, as always, talking to you. Everybody, if you're not reading Heather every week over at Salon.com, get over there and do it. It is phenomenal. You're also regularly on the Majority Report with our good friend Sam Cedar. So everybody keep an eye out for that. So Heather, once again, as always, it's an absolute pleasure and an honor to talk with you. So thank you for coming back with us.
It's an honor to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us this week here on Ring of Fire. And don't forget, you can sign up, help support the show by becoming a member at ROFpodcast.com. Not only do you get the full show commercial free every week, but you also get exclusive access to the entirety of the Ring of Fire podcast archives. And we've got fresh content for you 7 days a week, rain or shine, holiday or regular day, over at our YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. You can find me, Farron Cousins. I am on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Farron Balanced. Thank you so much for joining us this week, everybody. Have a wonderful week, and we'll talk to you next time.